Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Empowerment Network. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. I am Marvin Roan, and today we're having a conversation with one of my good friends and brothers, Brother George. He's going to talk to us today about our Juneteenth celebration week, and we're going to talk about the desperate need for blacks to learn political language. And so before we get started, we're going to talk about the National African American Empowerment Association and the mission is to empower African-American people to ensure the needs of community, the African-American community, are met through the development of programs and services that educate, inspire, motivate, and empower our community to become the best people that we can be. We know that there's some issues that we must face. We know that in the streets right now there's turmoil, but we have to do a better job of policing ourselves. We have to take care of our communities. We have to take care of our families. And we have to take care of our children. So today our conversation is going to be a discussion on the political language. And so, Brother George, I welcome you to the show. How are you?
I'm doing good, brother. Thank you for the invitation. And I really appreciate being here, able to talk to the people.
Okay. Tell us a bit about yourself. And then we'll go right into the topic for today.
Well, my name is Brother George. Affectionately, I go by Brother George. I was born in Charlottesville, Virginia, in 1954. My family moved back to Philadelphia after my parents split up. And so basically, I was raised in Philadelphia. Most of the time it was in Southwest Philly, which was a mixed neighborhood. And eventually I went into the military. And when I went into the military, I met some people that knew some things about black nationalism and the Nation of Islam. And so I became very interested in that. And so when I came out of the military, I seeked out, you know, the Nation, because I had seen the Clean Brothers up on the corner that was very impressive in the neighborhood. And so I always wanted to know something about them anyway. And so I joined the Nation under the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And at that time in 1973, when I joined, by 1974, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad had turned the Nation over to, at that time, Minister Wallace Dean Muhammad, which he eventually changed his name to Warith Imam Warith Dean Muhammad, and he also converted the Nation of Islam into the World Community of Islam in the West. Now, I have no problem with brothers and sisters that wanted to be a part of the overall Islamic community, but that's not why I joined the Nation. I joined the Nation for the black nationalist viewpoint. And so I left the Nation, and at that time I was pretty much confused and, you know, using drugs and alcohol and all of that. And so I was trying to find my way back to civilized living. And so I came to Richmond at the request of my biological father and got into a drug treatment program and started doing some things to change my life around. And in the meantime, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan rebuilt the work of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I joined him in 1981 to assist him with rebuilding the work of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And so basically, when I joined, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was pretty open-minded brother, and at that time he was encouraging us to read a lot of the Afrocentric brothers like Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. And so I did that. Now, once again, it piqued my interest, and I started reading more and more about those types of things. And so that's where, for the most part, my foundation comes from. Eventually, I started a study group, and that's where me and Brother Marvin became good friends, and we've been good friends since that time. And I'm here because he invited me to his show.
All right. Thank you, brother. I think, you know, as we continue to go through this process, I know that my foundation for my intelligence and my information came through you. I learned about Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben, Asa Hilliard, so many other of the greats who educated our people, Dr. Barashango, Dr. Welsing, and so many of Bruce Bridges. The list goes on and on and on about those who have committed their lives to educating our people. So before we go into the conversation, I want you, because you mentioned the Nation of Islam, I want you to talk about the benefits that you received from the training and the development of your time there.
Well, thank you for the compliments that you gave me, brother. I really appreciate that. But that's God's blessing to you through me. And when you speak about the nation, for the most part, taught me to be mission-oriented. It taught me to be disciplined and to be a man of my word. When you say something, your word is supposed to be your bond. And that way, that is why you see that the nation is able to accomplish so many things, because the brothers and sisters are mission-oriented. To try to go into the depth of all the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and through the direction of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is quite a bit, and I'm not going to really try to go into all that, but the basic fundamental thing that I got from the nation was to learn to be mission oriented.
Great. As far as that goes, as we've been able to converse ourselves, we talked about our responsibility and accountability and being goal oriented. And we know that in our community, that seems to be a portion of it that's really missing. So that goal orientation and being able to have structure and discipline and organization, not only in our families, but in our communities and in our organizations. How do you see that process of learning those skills in the nation helped you to become the man that you are today, along with other things that you've experienced in life?
Well, it got me into a mindset of the people are first. I belong to black people, and so everything that I do, I try to do to uplift the plight of my people. I try to focus on what is the best possible things that I can be doing for my people. I'm not a selfish brother that just cares about how much I could do for myself, because if it's not done for all of us, then what's the use? It's only, you know, when a few of us are doing well and the rest of us are doing wretched to the rest of the world. I know that we're great people, but we just don't know our history and know the things that we have accomplished on this planet and given to civilized man. And I know that we don't know that. I could tell by our behaviors that we don't know it. And so we have to relearn those things, and we have to, once again, become a collective consciousness. We have to get under the same principles of life, of living. And like the 42 laws of or principles of Maya, we need to get back to living based on that. And if I think that if we did that and did some other things that made us more mission-oriented, instead of just being wherever we be and doing whatever we're doing, we don't have, it's no mission in that. There's no accomplishment in just hanging out, you know. So we have to stop doing those kinds of things and start doing things that are a collective consciousness, a collective in knowing the same types of things and doing the same types of work with the same type of mission at hand.
Laws of my eye. And I'm suggesting to our listeners that you go out and research those laws and be surprised what you find, right? So those 42 laws are very important to creating balance and stability in your life. And so I'm encouraging you to do your homework. So whatever you hear today and whatever we talk about on the shows, go and do your research. Go do your homework and develop strategies from the information that you find that could enhance your life. So we talked about structure. And so with the structure of the NAAEA, we use the peace concept. And so there's five peace concepts: politics, economics, athletics, which encompasses health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, and then there's a cultural component and an educational component. Today we're going to talk about politics, and the topic that we decided to expose ourselves to today is, again, the desperate need to learn political language. And so our people have to have a political language. What would you say, Brother George, is that political language, and why is it important that we understand that there's a need to learn that political language in this country?
Well, because of the way the educational system is set up, it's not really enough focus let me briefly give a definition of what education is supposed to be. Education was originally set up by human beings to solve the problems of the community. And once you solve the problems of the community, then you can turn that into culture. You can turn that into a regular practice. That's what culture is. It is things that you practice on a regular, consistent basis, even if it's from year to year, like certain holidays and things of this nature. Now, when we send our children off to school, they're not talking about the problems of the black community. They're talking about the problems of the overall community. And so that's what our children learn. And so that's what our children actually try to solve. And so you create new cultures. As a matter of fact, you know, if it had not been for the African-American presence in this country, a lot of the legal changes that take place are because of the African-American, you know, protesting different things. If you go back in time and see who made this government change its laws the most, it is us. But the thing is that when you talk political language, depending upon who it is that you're speaking to, that's the extent of your input into how much it's going to change. Let me give you an example. If you're speaking to a liberal-minded person that's in politics, let's say it's a liberal-minded president, then that liberal-minded president is going to be open to almost anything because that's how liberals are. Liberals are open to blacks, to interracial marriage, to all kinds of different things that traditional conservative whites are not for. So when you start talking about changing certain things in the educational system, a liberal-minded person might allow you to extend way out there and change a lot of things. Now, if you come to a moderate is going to have a limit. They'll let you change some things, and they'll let you have input in some things. But just because a person is listening to you does not mean that they're taking everything in that you're saying. Now, when you're talking about a conservative, like what's in the White House right now, you're going to have very little input because they are very resistive to change. And so when we begin to understand these type of things, when we approach people asking for certain stuff, it's like your expectations of what you'll get in return will change. And then to me, I think that it's a better solution to begin to say, how can we solve these problems ever going out the door? Because we are well capable of solving a lot of what we suffer from our own selves.
This conference as we continue to move forward.
Well let's ask a simple question. When you ask black people, you know, ask us, what are you? And then you say, well, I'm an integrationalist. When you talk in politics, they ask you, they say, what are you? And you say, well, I'm a Democrat. I'm a Democrat. Or I'm a Republican. And then after that, you say, well, and then they say, well, what, you know, what's your politics? What you, you know, well, I'm an integrationalist, you know, or I am a assimilationalist. I think we should try to act as much like white people as we possibly can, you know, or I'm a nationalist. I think that we can do all of this stuff ourselves and we should be asking for nothing less than reparations. I'm a revolutionary. I think we need to overturn the whole daggone thing. Or I'm a liberal-minded. I'm a extreme left, you know. And I think that everything should be on the table. We should go all out to do whatever it takes. Now, let's look at the other side of that picture, and we're talking about European Americans. And you ask them, what are your politics? And they say, well, I'm a Democrat. Or they say, I'm a Republican. And then you say, no, I'm talking about, you know, what you, you say, oh, I'm a moderate. And so now, the next one you meet, they say, oh, I'm a liberal. Or I'm somewhere in between a liberal and a moderate. And then you meet some more and they say, oh, I'm a Republican and I'm a conservative. Or I'm an ultra-conservative. Well, all of those terms, one set of terms is dealing with people that want something, and the other set of terms are people that want to keep something, and they want to keep all of it, or they want to dictate how much goes to you and from you. And that's what those terms, moderate, liberal, like Bernie Sanders is a liberal, and he runs as an independent because his ideas are so far to the left with even his own colleagues in the Democratic Party that he's a liberal and he wants a lot of change. Now you have somebody like Joe Biden, who is a moderate Democrat. He's willing to make some change, but not as much change as Bernie Sanders wants to make. They call Bernie Sanders' changes so great that they call him a socialist, which that goes into a whole nother ball of understanding political language. What is a socialist? What is a communist? What is a capitalist? You know, it's like these terms we have to become more familiar with so that we fully understand the language when a person is speaking to us.
That was great. That's great. So in spinning off of that political language, that understanding that political language creates a collective consciousness. And some of our conversations that led up to our meeting here today, you shared that word collective consciousness. But can you expand upon that for us?
A collective consciousness is a term that that came to mind some weeks ago, because I've been trying to focus on writing some short books that I can share what my view of the world is. And so I came up with that term, you know, collective consciousness, meaning that as a group of people, we're scatterbrained. We're in all different directions, and we really don't have a common goal, a common belief structure amongst us that could help us to unify in effort and energy so that we could accomplish many goals. Now, what I mean by, let me give you an example of a collective consciousness. Now, we have the holiday Juneteenth that's coming up, and we're going to celebrate it tomorrow. Now, in this country, a lot of our people have no idea of what Juneteenth is or how it came about. But the main thing is that we don't know anything about Juneteenth. Now, the reason why is because that was something that is very pertinent to African-American people here, because that dealt with a part of a phase of the Emancipation Proclamation. Okay, well, not exactly the Emancipation Proclamation, but it dealt directly with our emancipation. Okay, so why is it that the African-American, every single one of us in this country, doesn't know about that date and doesn't know what that date represents and how important it is to, especially to the brothers and sisters that were in Texas? It's because we don't get taught the same kinds of things. We don't get taught our experience here in America. We get taught the Europeans' experience here. That's why we know about the Civil War. We know about the Revolutionary War. We know about the Spanish-American War. We know about all these different things that deal with European life. We know about Wall Street. But how many of us before recent times knew about the Black Wall Street? We didn't know, because that should be a part of our collective consciousness. How come hardly any of us, it might be 5% of us that actually knows who we were before we came into the slave-making experience? We do not know. Now, you say, well, don't nobody know? Come on, that's really a ridiculous statement, because these people were slave trading for 200 years, and they were going back to the same exact places and getting us from other people over there, which, you know, to go into all that history is another conversation, but they were purchasing us for 200 years from the same area, and they knew exactly who they were getting. You don't just buy a product and don't know nothing about it. So they did know, but they decided not to teach you, because that would help you with your collective consciousness. Your collective consciousness is important, because your collective consciousness tells you who you were, who you are, and who you must be in the world. And that's why we're not mission-oriented, because we don't have a collective consciousness. We don't really know what we should be doing, or what we have done, or what we can do. So collective consciousness, to me, is a very, very extremely important issue that we need to be dealing with in the very near future.
All right. So that brings me to the mission of the African American Empowerment Association, and that is simply empowering our people mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. And so with this political language and creating a common goal on the political side, you talked about the political language, and then as we go into economic, the collective consciousness, you gave an example of a grocery store. Kind of talk about how that collective consciousness can come together in terms of economic development.
Well, in one of our conversations, I spoke to Marvin about a hypothetical situation, because I'm not saying that somebody's responsible for doing something like that. But what I said was, suppose you took a mega church that has like 7,000 to 10,000 members, and we have quite a few of them. And that mega church, the pastor decided, or his committee decided, we're going to open up a grocery store. And so in the process of starting that grocery store, one, you have the foundation, because you got 10,000 people that you can tell y'all are going to support our grocery store, because it belongs to our church. And we're going to start it, and everything in it is going to be top shelf, and our support is going to be those who go to this church. Now, when you open up that first grocery store, you have created about 50 to 75 jobs when you open it up. Okay, it's going to be successful because your congregation are committed to going to it and supporting it every single week to buy their groceries. So now, once that grocery store begins to be very profitable, at that point, you can open up another one of those grocery stores. And that grocery store, by the time that you open up that second grocery store, the community will have confidence in you, because your store is clean, it smells good, it's fresh produce in it, it's fresh meats in it, it's a good display of canned goods and different things that we buy at the grocery stores, and you'll have the support of the community. And so now you have created jobs, and then you can open up a second grocery store, for example. And you do the same thing. You repeat the same thing. You treat the customers with respect, dignity and respect, and you have your workers clean and sharp and doing their jobs well. And now you have two grocery stores. Now you can expand out and do something different, like you might want to sell a clothing line. But all of this can be accomplished when we have a collective consciousness, when we begin to look at things from a perspective of charity starts at home and then abroad. We have to stop thinking that we could solve other people's problems before we solve our own problems. I have no problem whatsoever with dealing with the rest of the human population. But right now, we seem to be the ones with the most material resources at our fingertips, but in the worst condition. You know, it's very different when you live in a part of the world that doesn't have these type of resources and you're living under poor conditions. But you have no excuse if the resources are right at your fingertips, but you're not thinking in the right mindset to take advantage of those. This is what I mean by the collective consciousness and its necessity.
Okay, with that being stated, what do you think the political and economic and educational languages our people are speaking now? And I know you gave me a really good definition of education, so let's talk about education for a minute. What do we need to do to bring that out of our kids and to get this collective consciousness going in terms of education?
Well, education, at its root, its base word is educaret. And this word means to draw up out of or to bring up out of. meaning that the educational process has something to do with you. It has something to do with you as a human being. And when nothing is talked about you, then you're not being educated. You're being trained. And most of what we experience in the educational systems today is training. And so that training teaches us to be Democrats if we're African-American. And sometimes being a Democrat, you can benefit from that. So I'm not trying to say there is absolutely no benefit in being certain things within this society. That's not my point, because that would be a ridiculous point if I was to try to make that. Because some of the few advances that we've made have come from us being supportive of the Democratic Party. So that's not my point. My point is that at some point you have to begin to maximize your education. You have to begin to maximize your influence into our children's education and their educational experience. It's ironic that about 50%, if not more, of our young people do not graduate high school. Now, I know that some people would like to contribute that to, well, we just ain't academically inclined. Well, that's not true. You know, it's a lot of evidence to prove the contrary. And we've done so many innovative things in this country that it's ridiculous. I mean, all you have to do is get a list of black inventions and their inventors, and it'll tell you that basically everything that's practical in this society, we invented it. Every single thing that's, well, not every single thing, but the majority, at least 90% of the things that are practical in this society, an African-American invented it. So it's not that we lack those skills. It's that we have so many other overlying problems that we're not dealing with. That's what hurts our energies in trying to be academic, because how you going to be academic if I'm high, you know, if I'm drinking liquor every day and I'm so high and so disoriented, I can't focus on nothing. If I'm worried about when I'm going to get my next pack of cigarettes and I'm jonesing for a cigarette, so I'm going all around the neighborhood trying to find me a cigarette or try to find me something to get high with. You can't focus on being academic with that type of mindset. We, you know, the collective consciousness also puts you in a mindset of properly setting your priorities. We have to reestablish what our priorities are going to be with our children and with our children's education and their advancement. And you'll find that when you put more time into your children, that you will find that they will reward you with the solutions that we look for. The confusion comes from when the greatest tool for capitalism is confusion. When I can keep people confused, then I can sell you almost anything. And I can keep you from focusing on trying to succeed because you're so confused that you focus on the wrong things. You set your priorities in the wrong places. Now, in my view, the things that we could do to improve on our having less confusion in our community is through parenting. when, for example, I'm going to give it from the male side because I'm a male. Now, when you are a parent, the only thing that you have to do to be qualified as a parent is to be on one side of planting that seed into an egg. Okay, that makes you the biological parent. Okay, now, being a father is a different thing. Now, when you become a father is when you supply for that child, you get that child food, you drop that child off at the school, you make sure that they are obedient to adults and different things like that. You're fathering. Okay. Now, the thing to me that really is the missing link with black people is the dad. A dad is very different from just being a parent and also being a father. The dad is the one that's there when you're struggling. The dad is the one that's there when you run in track and you come across the finish line first. And he's applauding you. The dad is the one that when you are on the basketball team and you are aspiring and that's a part of your life now and you feel good about your achievements and your dad is there to encourage you on. Now, I'm not saying that mom is not there. That's not my point. I'm just talking about dad right now, okay? And your dad is the one that's there. That's when you run off of the field or off the court and they're there to hug you or you hug them and you're so glad. And or either you walk off the field or the track or whatever dejected and they're there to inspire you to tell you, hey, it'll be okay. You know, we'll get it next time. That's a dad. And that's a very different thing. And that's a thing that is missing from the black community to a great extent. I'm not telling you that there are no dads. That's not what I said. I said, for a large part, the dad is missing from the black community. And so if we had more collective consciousness and more parenting and focusing on having better relationships between the black male and female, our problems would be dissolving as fast as when you put sugar in water and stir it up. You see? So that's my position on how we could better solve a lot of the confusion issues that's within our community.
Well, I know you're not a social worker, but we all know that we have dysfunctional relationships between our males and females. And so why are the dads missing? Right, and then what do we need to do to coalesce our relationship between our males and females to develop a stronger family unit?
Well, that's a tough question because a lot of our relationship problems stem from not having resources and money. You know, when you don't have a good job, then it's going to cause problems in your relationship. Now, I'm going to set up a scenario that many other educators talk about, and that's the pipeline from the school to the prison system. Now, if everyone knows about that pipeline, then somebody built the pipeline to make that happen. Because if I teach you in a particular way that is very wholesome for your development, it's not much chance that you're going to wind up going to prison. But if the focus is on things that you're disinterested in and while you're in class, you ain't focused, you know, and one thing leads to another. When you have a poor education, and you have a poor family setting where you might not have dinner that day or breakfast might not wasn't ready before you left home and you're hungry and all these kind of categorically fit into a wholesome school day, then you're not going to be very productive and you're not going to be very successful in the classroom. And so that's going to lead probably down the path where you quit school. So once you quit school, now it's like, I got to get some type of job because your parents are going to get all over you and they're going to say, you ain't going to stay here and not be doing nothing. And so now it's time to go get a job. Now, how are you going to get a job when you don't even have a high school diploma? And so the jobs that they want to offer you are very low paying jobs and at the bottom of the totem pole, which is what we're set up for in the first place. So we don't want the bottom of the totem pole jobs. And so there is another economy, there is another employer that's out there that we all know about, and that's the illegal market. And so then we drift into the illegal market. And so a lot of us kind of dibble and dabble, you know, and we don't want to, we stick our toe in the water, but we don't want to go all the way in because we know we could wind up in jail if we get caught with it, this, that, and the other. But my point is that they know that that illegal market is there because they set it up for us to use it. And when we set that illegal market up, it's designed to send many of our young people straight to jail. Now, you're talking about relationships. If you got all of these good-looking young brothers that have promise, really, if they're put in the right hands, in prison or in jail, and the young women are out here, possibly have been impregnated by one of them before they got put away. So now they're out here with a child by themselves. Their parents are upset with them because they went and got pregnant. Now, this is the foundation for a supposedly good, wholesome relationship. No, that's not going to happen. It's going to be chaotic, which is the way most of our relationships are with our young people. It becomes chaotic. And so we as adults, as the adults population in the black community, we have to redirect what is priority one in our communities. And priority one is that we got to bring back a collective consciousness with collective energies to do the right types of things with our young people and quit being afraid of our young people. And we need to start guiding them into what is a wholesome relationship. And we need to make sure that we can get it through to them even outside of the church or the mosque. We have to make that commonplace right in the community. Because that's why so many of our young people's relationships fail when in the beginning they have good intentions and they, in their hearts, they really feel love for each other. And then when the promise of the United States and the promise of what they were told about in high school, they don't get, then everything begins to get bitter. It's a bunch of criticism. You ain't S-H-I-T and you ain't this and you are B-I-T-C-H and you ain't, you know. We get into all these confusing, chaotic type discussions and it just rips our relationships apart. And what we have to do is we have to learn to bring all that good loving back to our community and teach our people how to better treat each other.
Okay, so you talked about a political language, a common goal, right, and the collective consciousness. And you gave an example of a person who didn't graduate high school. On the other end of the spectrum, we have highly educated individuals within our community. They have established themselves economically, right? And with the financial piece of them being successful. What is the message to them in terms of collective consciousness? Because we have to have that balance that we need.
Well, brother, I don't want to like throw all of the weight on brothers and sisters that took the time to go to school, to educate themselves. And a lot of times they really want to do something for the community. But when the opportunities are in white society and in white corporate America, and they're going to go get paid $200,000+ a year to work there versus trying to stay with us, might get a job for $50,000 a year, they're forced to make a life decision based on financial need. This is a capitalistic society, and so everything is based on what you have. It's based on material accumulation. I'm not even going to call it wealth. I'm going to talk about accumulation. What you can accumulate, okay, is what's been made number one in this society. Now, what I think our actual duty is that if our young people were being appropriately educated, they would want to business enterprise within our community. They would be figuring out ways to build a mall, to build a movie theater that's showing the movies that attract us that we want to go and see. And the society would be putting us in a mindset that we would not be going to see black exploitation type movies, but more black educational and black experience type movies. And so, yeah, of course, the what is called the Talented 10 by W.E.B. Du Bois, which is supposed to be the 10% of our most educated within any racial group. Yeah, I would really love for our Talented 10 to come back and create something for our people.
So while we're there, give me an example of what that collective consciousness would be for our Talented 10, and what would be their political language with the resources and the education that they have?
Well, I honestly believe that the majority of our Talented 10th are integrationists. Now, they have the perfect right to be an integrationalist because pretty much that's what their education has taught them, that what we all need to be is we need to integrate. Now, I don't really think that America is really integrated. I think that America is desegregated, which desegregation means that you are forced into places where other people exist, like blacks are forced into where white people are by the governmental agencies. We're forced in there, and that's why they get so upset when we show up. Now, the language that many of our Talented 10th, they have pretty nationalistic type language. Their language is very nationalistic, and they really would like to build something for us here in America. But it's like we don't, because it's not a collective consciousness, even though they're the thinkers and planners for the community, if the rest of the body is not following where the head is going, then it's almost like, what's the use? And so they get in a position of being frustrated, which when you talk to many of our educated people, they talk very frustrated with the community. And it's because our community doesn't support itself, because we're so busy trying to meet the needs of overall society that everybody should be working to help each other, you know. But it's like, but you forgot to say that you're in complete control of everything, and that by helping everybody, we're actually helping you more than anyone else. And so we're not getting that concept, and I think that we're kind of afraid to support our own selves because we think it's going to be some penalty involved, and there's no greater penalty than what we've already faced, you know. But for the most part, I think the talented 10th would really like to accommodate the Black community with advancement.
Great answer, brother. So how do you think we should redefine ourselves? And what would be some of the steps in that process of redefining ourselves, utilizing the best of our talented 10th and the best of our gifts and talents and abilities? And if you could just summarize it up and we'll tie this thing up with the redefinition, what would that look like in your opinion?
Well, to really redefine ourselves, because my personal view from my teaching is that when we were called the Negro in America, which was like back in before the 60s, because in the 60s we changed to Black, and then in the 70s we changed to African American. It's a lot of different titles that we've been under, except for the ones that actually belong to us. Now, when we were the Negro, to me, the Negro is a creation that was created during slavery, the nigger. And we were made to be obedient to Europeans because we were their slaves. And we were made to think in terms of what was best for massa, what was best for them. And so we got away from thinking of what was best for us. So now in the redefinition process, we have to venture back beyond slavery to figure out who we were before we came into the slave-making experience. That is the starting point. We have to pick up where we dropped off with our human development, our human advancement, our societal advancement. We have to go back to that point and then pick up from there. Now, based on my research, the African American, at least 90-some percent of us, are what you call Moors. We are Moorish Aboriginals here in America. Now, that's a deep term because the Aboriginal part is something that goes way back, much further than the Moors. The Moors go back about 600 years. And for us to venture back and do research on the Moorish Empire, which spanned from the Pyrenees Mountains, which is somewhere in Spain, and you come down through the west coast of Africa, that's where the Moorish Empire last was before we were conquered, and eventually many of us were sold into slavery. And originally we were sold into slavery by the Arabs. And the Arabs were the other Islamic empire, which was the Ottoman Empire, which is the one that you hear probably the most about the Ottoman Turks and Iran and Iraq and Arabia and all that. You hear about those. But you never heard about anything about the Moorish Empire. Some of y'all have, but you don't really know what it meant because you haven't done your research to find out exactly what it meant. So my point is that we have to start becoming excited and become interested in learning exactly who we were, and then that would tell us who we are right now. And it would tell us, as Dr. Clark said, your history is like a clock that tells you the time of day, and it tells you when to do different things and when not to. And right now, I think that if we really did some sound research into who we were, that we would begin to start having a mindset, a collective mindset, that would lead us to a better problem-solving mind for ourselves in that renaming of who we are.
Wow. Thank you, brother. That was deep. So I want you to go and do your research. The empowerment is about education, right? We have to educate ourselves on who we were, who we are, and who we will become. So take this information in, do your homework, pass it on to your friends and families, have discussions about it, call into some of our shows, and we can hash this thing out. But I want you to do your research. I want you to listen to this show a couple of times and pull some points out. Share them with your friends and families. I would like to thank Brother George for coming in today. This brother has really been insightful. Come back and see us again. We're going to talk more about empowerment, politically, economic, health, fitness, culture, and education as we move forward. Visit us on the web at www.theempowerment.weebly.com. Join us on our Saturday show at 2 p.m. Empowerment Saturday. We have been doing this, and we're going to continue to motivate, inspire, and empower our community to become the best that we can be. So we will talk to you next week. Go out tomorrow and celebrate Juneteenth. If you're listening to this on demand, share the show with a friend, a family member, and continue to work on yourself to become the best person that you could be wherever you are. We will talk to you soon. Peace.